It's kind of existential, really. I mean, microbes have been around a long time before human beings, and certainly before other complex life forms as well. To me, and I'm sure other people don't feel the same, to me it's really comforting. It makes me feel connected to nature. It makes me feel connected to animals. It makes me feel connected to the plants that I'm studying, that, like, all of us have this thing in common, that we are basically a palette for the paint that is our microbiomes.
One thing that this pandemic has made clear to me, and it's something that maybe I always knew intellectually, but I don't know, maybe I didn't feel it so personally, but it's that the universe does not only exist at our scale. The replication of a minuscule packet of proteins has frozen the entire human world, and it isn't even something we can see. There is something scary about that, definitely. But only scary in that it shows just how much of the universe is outside of our sightline. Events happening on the order of galaxies or microbes are just as much a part of our universe as events happening that are the size of bullets or buildings. Okay, this is not a condemnation for humans' ignorance. Because if there's anything humans have been good at in the last 300 years or so, it's learning about the parts of the universe that we can't see. And in some amazing ways, learning how to control them. It is a reminder to me, though, that just because I can't see it, the minuscule and massive sides of the universe are still ticking along as if I'm not even here. This episode, like all of them in season 2, was recorded while in quarantine, and there's a few sound buzzes that I wasn't able to fix because of it. My apologies, I hope it doesn't distract you too much from what was an incredibly fun, sweet, and deeply interesting conversation. I hope you guys enjoy listening to it because I really enjoyed making it. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to At Least There's This, a podcast about some of the small good things in our world of hurt. We are still deep in quarantine. It's the end of May 2020, and I was just reminiscing with my girlfriend about how at the end of 2019, everybody was like, man, can't be worse than 2019, huh? No way that's possible. And we're now in a place where people are insinuating that it's their God-given right to breathe on all the shit at a grocery store. That's the life we're living in, where all of the thread that tried to obscure the fact that things aren't great and not necessarily getting better is fraying. But in a world where there is all of that fraying and tearing of people's masks and social order, at least there's
microbes.
Hi, everybody. I am with science communicator, grad student, dear friend, and someone whose career as a communicator I'm so thrilled to be a part of, Angela Mancy. Hi,
hey.
Angela.
Hey. That was such a kind introduction.
I run this science communication show that I do with two of my friends called Science the Show, where we bring scientists and comedians together on stage to try to break down the barriers of, like, who scientists are. And Angela just happened to come to a show in the infancy of the show, and we were still hurting to try to find science guests, and she was like, hi, I am a scientist, I want to do this. And we were like, that's good enough audition for us. And she killed it and has quickly become an integral part of the community of science communicators in LA that we are a part of and creating. It's been amazing to watch her develop her own voice as a science communicator. But we'll talk more about that in your plugs on how people can find your work. Until that, let's just talk about you. Hi, Angela. How are you?
Hello. I'm great. Well, I'm good. I'm good. Let's be honest. I'm good. Okay.
All things considered, you're fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm alive.
Yeah. How's quarantine been for you? I mean, all things considered.
All things considered, I think I've been pretty lucky. I'm lucky that as a graduate student, my school is continuing to pay me and that I can work from home. I'm also really lucky that my wife has continued to get paid. She's a librarian and isn't able to actually work from home, but they've committed to keep paying her salary, which is insane.
That's so great.
So, I feel like I have no room to complain. That said, isolation sucks.
Yeah. I'm starting to get really... So, I'm a hardcore introvert. I love people. I'm great with the people who I love, but I love alone time. I love, like, cloistering myself like a monk and just, like, reading books and meditating and all that shit. But I am sick of this.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Same. Yeah. I think Bree, my wife, is doing a little bit better. I think she's far enough on the introvert end that she's still okay. Me, I'm like a little bit more in the middle, and I mean, first week for me, I was already like, I just want to see the people I work with. I want to see my friends. But as a microbiologist, I know that I can't right now. Like, I have the information. I understand the consequences, and I feel very strongly that people should be staying at home right now, so obviously I'm going to listen to all of that. It's rough, but you know, all things considered, it's been pretty good. I'm lucky to have my spouse with me. I'm lucky to live in a house with other people as well. So it's been a little bit less lonely than it could have been in other circumstances.
I am partially quarantining with my girlfriend. I am completely quarantined. She splits her time between here and home, and here we don't go around anybody else, but her home people work and stuff, so like there's so much tension about like who's allowed to come over and what does it mean when somebody comes over, and oh well, this person's fine, but are they fine? And it's this new weird thing, like contentious.
Yeah, there's social rules to it. Like, if you see a housemate leaving the house without a mask, do you say something? Like, right. and if you choose to say something, maybe you're maybe they have it in their pocket and you just aren't seeing it.
It's added this whole new layer of insanity to our lives. I started dating who I'm dating now just before quarantine.
Oh.
And it's great. We were great together. I remember once you and I were drinking together and I was still dating and you're like, you need to date a spicy woman. And I'm dating someone who you and Bree, I think, would consider very spicy.
Excellent.
She's great. But like, she's not hanging out at her friends' places because I would be uncomfortable with her coming over here if she was hanging out with her friends. And that's a totally normal thing for right now. But mm-hmm. if I had said that in 2019, what a manipulative psycho boyfriend I would have been.
Yeah, you're only allowed to see me. I can't allow you to have any outside friends. So
yes, no, you can call them or you can go to their driveway, but you can't go in their house.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I bet this has like accelerated your relationship in an unforeseen way.
It has absolutely been the touchstone to see if, like, oh, are we actually good for each other or are we just very attracted to each other? And pretty good. I mean, we handle each other's shit really well, which has been – it's been nice to see that, like, oh, we deal with each other really well when we're grumpy or we need alone time or stuff like that. I mean, you and your wife have been together for a long time, so I'm sure you already knew that, like – oh yeah, we can handle being alone together for a while.
Definitely. When we first moved to California, we lived in a studio apartment in North Hollywood, and I believe the square footage was 310 square feet. So, and we lived there for a year, and neither of us were, well, that's not true. She had an internship for part of it, but for all intents and purposes, we were both at home, and we still loved each other. So, I feel like if you can get through that, you can get through anything.
Well, speaking of love and getting through anything, the question I like to start off with, just to kind of plumb the depths of what's going on in that brain of yours, is would you consider yourself an optimist or a pessimist? I think I know the answer, but I'm not going to out you.
I think most people could guess that I'm an optimist just by meeting me, but with some caveats. So I think... I've been thinking about this question, and I think I'm a long-term optimist. I I think that...
I love the caveats, because that then it gets juicy, then it gets interesting.
Yeah, I've loved listening to everyone else's long-winded explanations of exactly how they see the world. It's beautiful. so for me, I think I expect things in the short term to go wrong, because they do. But I don't think that makes me a pessimist, because I think in the long term, everything kind of smooths out. So like a good way to explain this is that like, I remember being a teenager and I remember lots of times where I felt like a failure, where things went wrong. But like now that I'm in my 20s, I can really easily look back on that time and be like, oh, it's fine. It all worked out for the best. I like the person that I've become, and if I had to go through those same things again, it would be a total cakewalk.
Right.
So, I think most people can relate to that, you know.
Certainly. Yeah. I'm in my 30s now, but that is not any less true. It's almost like the economy, where it's crazy bumpy day to day, but in the long run, it does kind of have a gradual, even slope to it.
Definitely. That's actually like a perfect comparison. Yeah. So in my own life, just day to day or week to week, I sort of expect that maybe the plans I have aren't going to exactly work out. But that when I look back on this time 5 years from now, I will still be happy about it. And so far that's been true.
Okay. Can you like give me an example of something that's either proven that theory to you or that gave you the theory in the first place?
I'm trying to find a nuanced example, because I don't like it when people use examples of my life was going really poorly and then I happened to get exactly what I want and that proves to me that life is good, because that doesn't happen for everyone.
And nor is that your point. You're not saying that it doesn't seem like there's this bifurcation point of bad, 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 good is what you're trying to say either.
Sure. And I also don't want to say, like, I'm not really a strong believer that everything in your life happens for a reason. I don't know. So here's an example that like sort of bridges those two things, but really gets at what I'm trying to say. When I was a kid, I used to get sick a lot. I've shared this with you.
You have.
And I feel like in my memory I was in the doctor's office every single week. It probably wasn't actually that, but it, you know, at the time it was super miserable, and I just thought, man, I'm just gonna be crazy sick for the rest of my life. Like, this is never going to let up. But it did let up. I got my tonsils taken out. That helped. and then also just not being a kid who's constantly like playing outside in the dirt also helps. And like eventually I did become more of a healthy person. And because of that time in my life, I started to get interested in the things that I'm studying now. I don't know. I guess that still sort of feels like everything happens for a reason. But to me, it's an example of like some bad things happened, but it was good in the end. It was a good learning experience. I grew as a person.
The reasons are retrospective, though. It's not like everything's happening for a reason that it's known why it's happening. You applied the reason post hoc.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what we do as human beings. We look at our lives and we like to turn them into stories.
And how is that optimistic and progressive for you?
Well, now that I'm older, I am more aware that things can go wrong, but that no matter what it is, it's probably not forever. And even if it is, then I'm going to keep growing throughout and learn how to handle it better and better every day.
So it's like things won't necessarily go good because good is arbitrary in this instance. Things will go and I will adapt. I will, or we, whatever this system you're talking about, people or individuals will figure it out.
Yeah, that human beings are really resilient, and I include myself among that group of people.
As would I.
And so even considering the dire circumstances that we see ourselves in now, I even in quarantine, I've found that I'm getting a little bit better every week. I'm feeling a little bit better. I'm finding more ways to feel like myself and to find joy. And so even in something that's like as terrible and sad and lonely as this, that like things I think are still on the up, you know?
What sorts of things are you doing to find that joy?
Actually wearing clothes that I like. I try to do that. I think for the first few weeks I was just in pajamas the whole time, and that's it's fun, but it's probably not a good call for mental health.
Yeah. I love my sweatpants, but there's something about the way that they hang on my legs that just makes me feel like I'm a slug.
Yes. That's a great, yeah. I like to joke that I feel like a potato sometimes. Like, it's just
the way it hangs, yeah.
Yep. And then one of the things that's brought me the most joy is I splurged on some fun pajamas that I had been holding onto in my shopping cart for forever, and they have dinosaurs on them, and they just make me so happy, Alex. Like, am I a child?
I love when the science nerds that I hang out with are just like, yo, this me. Hi. Yep. Dinosaur PJs. I was talking to another one of our friends the other day, and he's like, hey, you want to come with me to go buy a robot? And it's like, I can't right now, but I love that that's just who you are. You're going to go pick up a robot you found on Craigslist. Okay, so speaking of science, I'm segueing here. Watch, see if you know where I'm going. And you already did kind of bring it up because of your expertise in microbiology, why you should not be going out. Why did you want to talk about microbes on this podcast? Like, what? So this, I know, is your whole deal, but microbes certainly sound to the layman like, ooh, icky germs, bad, right? Like, why is that good?
Definitely. I have always loved microbes, and possibly there's something wrong with me. I think with a lot of scientists, they tend to study things that most people would consider weird or icky, but for some reason with this one individual, something different went on in their brain and they just love that thing. So maybe I'm a little bit strange, but I just think microbes are so wonderful, and the more I study them, the more I discover that they are like the framework for every living thing, that they are just keeping our world alive and making us who we are and shaping us. And it's true that like a handful of them are really serious and really scary. Like in my love for microbes, I in no way want to downplay like the honest horror that so many people are experiencing right now. You know, there are microbes that cause disease and are really serious, and we should do what we can to fight them. But at the same time, there's millions of others that are keeping our world churning and just making everything good. So just keeping that in perspective is really important, I think.
There are so many directions I want to go after this, but I think first, can you just define our terms for people who aren't as, I don't want to say scientifically literate, but for people who don't spend as much time in the space, can you just define what a microbe is really quick?
Absolutely. Microbes are basically any life form that is really, really tiny. They're microscopic, something that you would probably need a microscope to look at. When I say microbe, most of the time, and this is, I think, true for most scientists, most of the time we're talking about bacteria and viruses. So bacteria...
Oh, I didn't realize viruses were included in microbes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They are a big chunk. And then if you're not talking about those two, you're probably talking about fungi, which you already had an amazing episode about yeast. I loved that.
I love yeast, and I'm growing oyster mushrooms in my house now out of coffee grounds. So it just, fungi are my shit. I love it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's cheap. It's easy. You can just save your oyster mushroom like scrap and throw it in processed but like dried coffee grounds with a little bit of water, and it'll grow. You just get free mushrooms that way. Yeah, it's great.
Oh my gosh, that's excellent. I'm so proud of you.
Oh, thanks.
And then if you're not talking about those things, sometimes people are talking about other tiny things like plankton or amoebas. For me, like I said, I mostly know about viruses and bacteria. Those are the two things that I love.
You're talking about these sort of hidden, unseen things that keep our lives running. When was the first time you realized, because I know that you have given this perspective to me, and that's sort of one of the things you do as a science communicator, and one of the things I love about science communication in general, it's somebody with a particular perspective trying to share their hard-won perspective with an audience that views things more in the... I've been reading, like, some philosophy of mind right now, and this one philosopher I like talks about things in the manifest image and the scientific image. And the manifest image is where most of us live, and the scientific image is like you live there and you have a particular scientific image that's the image, like what exists in the ontology of microbiology, and you see that and you try to share that with people like me, and you've given me a glimpse into that perspective of this world, this teeming tiny world underpins everything. I want to hear you talk about that, but first I want to hear, like, when was the first time you had that, like, fuck moment? That moment of awe.
I love that you just used lots of beautiful big words and then summed it up with an aw fuck moment.
If you can't sum up a bunch of hoity-toity philosophy words with aw fuck, then you're not doing it right.
So, all right, I guess let's go on this journey together. And you've heard lots of this, but
my audience hasn't, so.
True. I got sick a lot as a kid. I don't think I have any actual autoimmune disorders, so I just want to throw that out there. I don't want to complain so much that it sounds like things were more serious than they were, but I did get strep a lot.
Me too.
Yeah, what is it about that, man? Like,
your throat always hurts.
Yep.
Like, that's life.
Yep. It was rough. And lots of icky medicines. But anyway, I was a curious kid. I was the kind of kid that whenever I went to the dentist, I would be trying to talk to the dentist through the entire procedure because I just wanted to know everything that was going on. Like, why does it taste like that? And what are you doing? And so, I mean, it was the same thing at the doctor. They would be running tests on me and, like, putting swabs down my throat and up my nose. And I just wanted to know, like, everything. I wanted to understand exactly what was going on. And maybe part of that is because I'm kind of an anxious person. And so I thought, if I can understand this weird thing that's going on in my body, maybe I'll feel just a little bit better and a little bit more secure. It won't just feel like I'm going through this roller coaster ride that I have no control over.
Wow.
And so I started learning first about germs. I mean, I think that's the microbes that everyone starts learning about when they're kids, at least people in our generation. We learn about the bad guys first. So microbes to me were like invisible bad guys. They were the things that make you feel like shit and make you miss school and drink these like disgusting fluids and medicines.
Pink
that
and chalky and
yes.
Yeah.
Ugh. God, it was awful. And my sweet mother had to mix some of them with like mashed bananas because they were like so gross to me that some of them would make me throw up. It was awful. So anyway, at first they were bad guys, but even that was interesting to me because it's like, how do we have monsters that we can't see? That's crazy. And so I started looking into them a little bit more as I got older. And then in high school, in AP biology class, we talked about the whole span of life. And that was by far the most interesting part of the class to me, was just learning about microbes. And it reminded me of being a kid. And it reminded me also of like watching the Magic School Bus and like the Inside Ralphie episode and like all of those like cute little baby SciComm things. That first show you like what the human body kind of looks like. And so I knew I wanted to study that going into college, but it wasn't until I got to college that I really discovered that microbes are also the good guys. And that's crazy to me that it took me that long to actually learn something so critical. And I imagine things are different now that there's more public consciousness of the importance of, like, the gut microbiome. But for me, it took, like, basically 2 decades to first hear that microbes are actually really important. And that was my favorite thing. So when I was a freshman, I took on a research project where I was studying bacteriophages, which sounds like a really big word. It basically just means viruses that infect bacteria, which is crazy. So first learning that not only are microbes out there, but they're also affecting one another. They're not just affecting people. They have their own little world and interactions as well. And what was cool about studying bacteriophages is I learned that we can actually use viruses to help not cure disease, but to help treat disease. Because you can imagine if a person or a plant or a bee has some kind of bacterial infection, and we give them these bacteriophages that can fight that bacteria, then it will help them to get better. And that was crazy to me, because certainly up until that point, virus was almost like a swear word. Like, viruses are terrifying and scary and only destroy, right? So seeing that destruction targeted at something else that was dangerous was interesting. And then I started digging a little bit deeper, and I participated in another lab that was studying microbes that help plants get nitrogen and keep plants alive. And so this was like all the way on the other side of the spectrum, was microbes that were almost critical for life.
Is that a time when you were hit by the scope of this world that you're looking at, this sort of teeming tiny world that scaffolds everything else?
I think it was when I specifically took the class microbial ecology that happened to me. So to kind of break down these words, ecology is basically just studying the way that things interact in an environment. And so in that class, I got to learn about how microbes are affecting not just things in ecosystems, but the ecosystem of your body. And that was the class where I first learned about the gut microbiome and how you're basically completely smothered in bacteria, that it's a gigantic part of you. And some would even argue that it's like a part of your consciousness. And that's when it like really smacked me over the head, like, oh my gosh, microbes are so important, and they're everywhere. Like, they affect the way that you think, the foods that you want to eat, and they're not really something that you can sanitize away. They're all up inside you, all over you, so you better get used to it.
I remember asking Alex Danis on the episode I did with her, but I think I want to ask you this too. Do you feel like you know a secret?
A little bit. I do love hitting people upside the head with the fact that half the cells in your body are bacteria.
That is a hard fact to wrap one's head around. Like, I've heard that for maybe 2 years now, but like, can you, what the hell does that mean?
It just means that we've started to be able to quantify your microbiome, so all of the microbes that are living on and in your body. And in doing so, we've realized there's actually a lot more there than we originally thought. I do think that if people are like already triggered by that fact, it is important to note that like human cells are far, far larger than bacteria generally. Biomass wise, you're mostly human.
I'm sure that caveat's really putting people at ease.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it's really cool, because you have to remember, like, I'm not saying that half of your body is germs. These aren't germs. These are microbes that are keeping you alive. They're digesting your food. They're helping out your immune system and protecting you from the actual bad guys. They're affecting all of your senses, and they may be even affecting your personality. So, like, they are really a part of you, which is why when I describe it, I say, like, half of your cells are bacteria, instead of saying as many cells as you have, there's that much bacteria on you, because personally, I feel like it's part of you.
Yeah, you're sort of extending the bounds of what it means to be you.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, this sort of hits, I guess you could call them the philosophical or spiritual, if that's a word that means something to you, implications of it all, but that, like, there isn't much of a hard boundary.
Yeah.
Between you and the rest of the world is what I'm getting from what I've heard from you in this interview and also just knowing you for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm. You've totally hit it. I mean, I think once you open that door, there are so many other magical realizations, like the fact that whenever you interact with another human being, you are sharing bits of your microbiome with one another. And if we're counting the microbiome as a literal portion of who you are, then that's like a whole nother layer of connection and interaction where you're basically swapping cells with another person. You're connecting not just emotionally but physically with them just by shaking hands or even living in the same house. So, and of course, like, there's a little bit of sadness that, like, a lot of these things aren't things that we're taking part in right now. I'm sure for most people, they aren't mourning the fact that they're not sharing bacteria with people right now, but for me, it's something that actually makes me a little bit sad.
Well, is it nice to you to know that you share bacteria, you are sharing bacteria with people? Like, is this the type of thing that if we changed our thinking around could be a positive, or do you think this is one of those scientific image facts that shouldn't bleed over into the manifest image?
I think it is really cool, and I wish more people knew about it, because I think most of the time this is a really positive thing, because most of the stuff that you're sharing with this other person is usually good stuff. You're just becoming more similar just by being in the same space. The obvious caveats are in sharing disease, so I don't want to glorify sharing COVID with your neighbor. Please don't do that. That's not the same.
What kind of good stuff gets shared? What is the positive? Because you're right, I only ever think about any sort of microbial transmission as negative, because you hear, you know, you pick up COVID or even the flu or anything from passing somebody else, but you never hear about positive microbial transmission.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the more detail you go into it, the grosser it might sound, but we're gonna go there anyways, so
let's get gross.
So I mean, you have your skin microbiome, so you have microbes that are on your skin, and whatever is there is usually there to help protect you, and so if you were to share skin microbes with someone and maybe you have some that are more protective than others, then you might be able to share that protection with your friend. You also have your gut microbiome, which it is true that, like, people that you live with, your gut microbiomes become more similar over time, that you literally are sharing that. And personally, I'm not exactly sure how that happens, because we're not exactly rubbing our intestines together every day. but some kind of transfer is happening there. And your gut microbiome, as people are probably very aware at this point, is really important for your health. It's another line of defense. It's the way that you digest food. It influences how good you feel. If you've ever been on a round of antibiotics and felt like absolute garbage afterwards, part of the reason is that in doing so, antibiotics are good. I just want to, like, throw that out there. Listen to your doctors. But part of the reason they make you feel like crap is that they are messing with that delicate balance of gut microbes. And when you lose that, you start feeling really awful. It just throws your whole body into whack.
Like, feel like yourself.
You don't feel like yourself, and you definitely don't feel like a healthy person, that's for sure. So I think sharing microbes is a good thing, because maybe maybe your particular mix of microbes is better, and if you can share that with another person, then that's great. One example that I'm really hoping happens, but I haven't found any evidence for it thus far. So I am like just riddled with cavities. It's awful. and I do everything right. My wife, on the other hand, has basically never even has to go to the dentist. Which is stupid because we eat all of the same food. We have exactly the same hygiene. She just has a better mix of microbes in her mouth that are helping protect her against the few baddies that cause cavities. And I have wished over the years that maybe that would, like, cross over into my mouth and, like...
They win the war against the microbes in your mouth and colonize your face.
That was my hope. I don't know if that's actually happened, but, you know, I can keep kissing her and hope that someday...
Someday. So, how... Again, I think I want to take this maybe a little bit more emotional. How does it make you feel knowing that there is that baseline of biological connectivity to yourself, to the environment, that, I mean, to be almost sci-fi about it, we're like meat suits to get these microbes around.
It's kind of existential, really. I mean, microbes have been around a long time before human beings, and certainly before other complex life forms as well. To me, and I'm sure other people don't feel the same, to me it's really comforting. It makes me feel connected to nature. It makes me feel connected to animals. It makes me feel connected to the plants that I'm studying, that, like, all of us have this thing in common, that we are basically a palette for the paint that is our microbiomes, and that any interaction we have, we're like sharing a little bit of that magic and mystery. And it just, I just think it's wonderful. I think it's that thing that, like, I think personally, whenever I hear other people talk about spiritual ways of how human beings connect with one another and, like, connect with deity and connect with nature, and that it's like the force. Like, to me, this is the force. This is the invisible world that is connecting everything together, and keeping us alive and making us who we are. That's what microbes are to me.
That's beautiful. That's deeply comforting, too. I mean, walking in the woods, knowing how all of the cells work of the entire flora and fauna is probably a pretty mind-expanding experience. Do you get that in the lab at all?
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because when you're actually doing science, it's kind of nose to the grind. It does feel a little bit different, but, like, every once in a while, I do get, like, glimpses of that wonder. One of my favorite things is working in the greenhouse, and just tending to plants and feeding them bacteria and watching them grow. It just brings me so much joy. It's true that it's not the same kind of joy that I've just been describing, because out of necessity, in a lot of the work that I do, I can't literally be physically interacting with the plants that I study. I have to be wearing gloves all the time, and that's a good thing. that's fine. I'm not contesting that, but I do really love it. I do really love it. Even now during quarantine, I'm actually teaching a microbiology lab class, which has been interesting, to say the least. And the way that we've done our little workaround is me and all the people in my class have all gotten little at-home microbiology kits. And the first time that I actually, like, got to do a lab with my students over Zoom and, like, bust out the bacteria and show them how to, like, streak plates and, like, inoculate tubes and just, like, grow this stuff, that was like the day of quarantine where I, like, finally felt like myself, that I finally felt good and human again. was just interacting with this thing that I love. It just brought me joy. And since then I've had I've continued to have these bacterial cultures growing in my bathroom to the chagrin of my wife, but but it's weirdly brought me a lot of happiness.
I mean, isn't it amazing just to watch something grow? I have a pretty cute little herb garden here, and I've got a compost bin, but I also, like I said, I've been growing oyster mushrooms, and watching the mycelium colonize a yogurt tin of coffee, and now they've started to actually fruit, and watching the mushroom heads just like appear from nowhere is so... I know I'm talking about mushrooms, but it is a deeply like psychedelic thing to just watch a thing grow. I have jasmine out in the garden that's growing like crazy, and just watching something happen, it's beautiful.
You know, I think you really hit on something there. I do think that just watching something grow can be like a wonderful spiritual experience. I know I definitely feel that with the plants that I work with. So in my lab, we work with cowpeas, which are like black-eyed peas. And my favorite part of the growing season is the time when all of them start popping their little baby heads out of the soil at once. And I could just hang out in the greenhouse for hours while that's happening. It's like such a hit of dopamine.
It's so nice.
Yeah.
I love the flavor of black sesame, and so whenever I go to a Chinese grocery store, I buy a bunch of it, but I accidentally bought raw black sesame, I spilled it, cleaned it up, threw it in the compost bin, whatever, not thinking about it. Then 3 weeks went by, I opened up my compost bin, and it's just covered in black sesame sprouts.
Whoa!
And it was such a delightful hit of, like, oh, shit just happens. I didn't have to do anything. It did it on its own.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Life is crazy.
Life is pretty crazy. That I'm glad that you brought up the cowpeas in your lab, because I did want to ask you about if there is any particular case that makes you happy or that really proves the point you've been talking about. And then I also wanted to ask, and these can be the same or different, if there is... We're talking about the spiritual, psychological, I mean emotional, big G good of microbes, but if there is something really concrete that you wanted to talk about in microbes, like, hey, don't you know how cool X is?
Oh, that is a really big question. So I know I've been talking about microbes on a very like personal human level about how they just make me happy. but the reality is that like I do want to hit on this, they are keeping you alive. Like, if you didn't have microbes, you would be dead. So, like, just as human beings, they are what help us stay alive. We are 100% symbiotic with them. And that is true of a lot of life. As scientists, in studying organisms, a lot of the time we try to develop organisms that we can study without the presence of microbes, and that is incredibly hard, because most life has developed to work with them and doesn't like working without them. There's a lot of things that if you try to grow it in the lab without microbes, they will just wilt or die or be very, very sick. And I see that in my own lab all the time. The cowpeas that I'm studying their interaction with soil microbes that make little homes in their roots and exchange nutrients with them. And the plants that I like feed microbes to are like big and green and luscious and wonderful and exactly what you would want. And the plants that don't get microbes are like yellow and wilting and super, super sad. They just basically never grow. So like talking about big G good, I think it's important to mention that like most life wouldn't exist without microbes. Like, it is keeping everything alive.
It almost seems like a nice parallel that it's clicking for me if people need metaphors, but like you couldn't play a computer game now without having all of the math that invented computers, that invented like graphics cards, that happened in the past 150 years. And like, we couldn't live unless there had been the entire lifetime of evolution of microbiology that allowed the structure for us to develop on, not just us, but all other biology. That's the sense that I'm getting from what you're saying.
Yeah, that's also a really good point. So like, not only are microbes keeping us alive now, but like, we also evolved from single-celled organisms, and the microbes that have been around since like the dawn of time have been the forces that have pushed us to become human, and for all other species to become what they are too. I've recently been digging more into viruses, because like, especially during this pandemic, it's good to even just remind myself that virus isn't a bad word. It doesn't always mean something terrible. And something crazy that I've learned is that 30% of the proteins that have developed in humans since we diverged from chimpanzees are because of the pressure that viruses have put on us.
What does that mean? Like, what's interesting about that?
It's cool that just in interacting with microbes, it's shaped the way that we've evolved into human beings. That even when microbes are hurting us or making us sick, that they're putting pressure on our systems to grow and become better later. And so, like, that's not going to happen within a single lifetime. It's not even going to happen usually within several lifetimes, but over long periods of time, that pressure forces us to evolve and become who we are. And not only that, I also learned that, so some people might know that I think it's between 6 to 8% of our DNA is the fragments of what used to be viruses that infected us. Viruses are crazy little buggers. They move DNA all around, and sometimes they slip their DNA right into ours, and sometimes it gets stuck there. So a portion of your DNA is from viruses, and one particular fragment is actually like partially responsible for the development of our placenta.
Wow. So they add a mutation that's either useful or not useful, and in the placental case it was useful.
Yeah, it's a protein that has a long name that I don't remember. But basically we developed this protein that is like essential for like a certain line of cells in the placental development. And that came from viruses, and now that gene is in, I want to say, all mammals, and it came from infection. So yeah, even in the case of viruses, which are so often destructive, they still make us who we are.
That goes back to your initial point in the answer that I asked, in the answer to the question that I asked if you were an optimist or a pessimist, and you said it's often bad or problematic or at least troublesome in the short term, but in the long run, and that in the long run things become something, right? Which you were saying, well, it sort of seems like I'm saying everything happens for a reason, but that's not what I'm trying to say. It's like, well, the reason is retroactive, because it's where we are now, and that's the process of evolution.
Yeah.
The reason's what survives.
Yeah, it's more like the way that things happen, however it shakes out, become meaningful regardless. Whether it's good or bad, they will be meaningful.
Right, because the things that are able to make the meaning are the things that survived through it, or
yeah,
because of. Yeah. I think I also wanted to lead you to talking about the work you're doing with cowpeas as a very solid, even though it's a big G good, it's like a, you know, very concrete G good that this is going to help feed people.
Yeah, I'll talk about that for a little bit. So, like I said, studying cowpeas, they are beans, and bean plants are really great because they are able to grow in lots of different climates. They can survive drought. They don't need a lot of water. They don't need a ton of nutrients, which makes them like kind of an amazing plant to grow in areas that really, really need food. So as most people are probably aware, beans have a lot of protein. That's true for cowpeas too. And what I think is like especially cool about cowpeas is you can actually eat the whole plant. Like you can turn the leaves into a salad. You can like obviously eat the beans. So it's very nutrient rich and very useful and cheap to grow all of these wonderful things. And what's great about legumes is that they work with bacteria in the soil to help them get the nutrients that they need, which means in a human context that in general we don't have to fertilize them as much. But as human beings, as we have grown these plants over long periods of time and we didn't know about microbes or any of these, you know, below ground processes, we've unintentionally, or at least it seems, we've unintentionally developed these big, beautiful plants that have kind of maybe lost a little bit of the ability to work with microbes in the soil. They have really big pods and are really tasty and are everything that we would want from a crop, except for the fact that now most of them actually do require fertilization. And fertilizer is kind of like its own topic, but basically fertilizer is bad. that to a farmer, fertilizer is great because it makes their crops grow really well, and it's almost essential for farmers to use fertilizer just to keep up economically. But in the long term, fertilizer changes the nutrients that are found in the soil in ways that deeply affects what microbes we find in the soil. And actually, because of the microbes that it draws, ends up leading to the production of greenhouse gases, which contributes to global warming. So to simplify all of that, fertilizers make global warming happen. We don't want that. So what I'm doing is I'm basically a relationship counselor for these cowpeas and these bacteria so that I can get these two crazy kids back together.
Because gosh darn it, you believe in their love.
I really do, man. They've been working together for thousands of years, and I think if we like really give this a good shot, we can get them talking again. So that's my goal, is to learn more about that relationship. So hopefully we can develop plants that are better able to just work with the bacteria around them and use that resource so that we don't have to fertilize them as much, so that we can grow them in more places for cheap, because, you know, fertilizer costs money, and if farmers could grow plants without it, that would be amazing and would make it more accessible to regions of the world that are more economically disadvantaged, making this like very healthy, amazing crop open to more people, and also, you know, also big G good, hopefully reducing global warming. So feed the world.
I love the strain of scientific futurism, which is like symbiotic futurism. Like we're gonna work to make everything. It almost, it's like the fantasy idea of the elf, mm-hmm. right? Where like, oh, we grew our great city out of trees, you know, like shit like that.
Yes. We're
like, oh yeah, we just do what's already here and we're able to eat from it because we understand it scientifically, which is the opposite of what I think a lot of people's conception of science is, which is that it's still the Industrial Revolution,
mm-hmm.
right? Like we're still all, it's all men in steam hats and like monocles.
I think people equate science with industry and industry with like cold, calculating, kind of destructive. But the reality is that most science that's happening and most scientists really love the earth and are just trying to make things work together better to help us understand. Yeah, we're all big stands of the earth.
Big earth stands over here.
Yeah.
So as we're getting towards a close, I think I wanted to point out that something you said in the beginning, you were very curious because you had a lot of anxiety, especially mm-hmm. as it related to sickness and microbes and germs. And that led you to a deep understanding of a thing where your anxiety, rather than making you more defensive, made you more open to a deep understanding of the world, which mm-hmm. I think that's a thing that I see in a lot of not just my friends who are scientists, but my friends who are successful at being people, not necessarily successful at like money success or a bunch of plums or whatever, but successful at being people is the things that make you anxious. You lean into trying to grow with and trying to understand rather than trying to fight against. Mm-hmm. So I find that interesting when you notice that with people. Like, I want to know, I want to understand this world I'm anxious about.
Yeah, I never thought about that before, but I do think it's a healthy thing to look at your life and see what's giving you anxiety or even just dissonance and really look at that thing. That if something is making you uncomfortable, maybe it's something you should look into a little bit more.
Before we get into plugs, as now you're doling out some great advice, when people are thinking about microbes, maybe they're out in their garden, or maybe they're terrified at the store, mm-hmm. because that is a real truth for us right now, is that just like leaving the house, we are filled with anxiety. What vantage point that you carry with you as a microbiologist do you want to impart to people in some way?
That just to remember, both for the good guys and the bad guys and everything in between, that microbes are everywhere. So in thinking about COVID, this is important because I see a lot of people doing their best and wearing masks, and maybe wearing gloves, but still interacting with the world around them in ways that might infect other people. So on that end, it is still important to remember that you are basically covered in microbes, and that means that if you are infected with COVID, that could be everywhere as well. So on the sad side, please remember that. Please be careful. Do everything you can to keep the people around you safe. And also, like, let that affect the way that you interact with other human beings while we're still working through this pandemic. But when we get out of this, remember that microbes being everywhere is generally a good thing. And that most of the microbes are either totally benign, or in most cases, if they're in or on your body, they're probably helping you survive. So if you feel icky about that, I would say to look into it and try to desensitize yourself to the possibly incorrect things that you've learned about microbes growing up, that they definitely aren't just germs. They're much bigger and more beautiful than that, and just let that inform the way that you see yourself, that you are an ecosystem, and that is really beautiful.
That was really beautiful. Thank you, Angela. For me, personally, that is a beautiful sentiment to take with me throughout the day. Where can people find more of your work?
So, I am still in my SciComm infancy, but if you would like to keep up with me, I do have a Twitter. It's super_Mancy. That's MANCI. And I sometimes post funny things and sometimes post about science. So it's not strictly professional. It's mostly for fun. But if you'd like to follow me there, I will post about any upcoming projects. And then if you want to see, I'm slowly starting up a video series about...
They're very good.
Oh, thank you. And I wish I had more time, but I will find more time, of the science in science fiction. So I have a video out now that's talking about the biology of the Demogorgon from Stranger Things. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, the YouTube channel is called Trope Hunters.
It's good stuff. I definitely recommend you guys check it out if you like nerdy, genuine, funny SciComm. It's good stuff. I As always, I am Alex Schiffman. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook if you really want to. But I would appreciate if you share this podcast with somebody who you think might like it, this episode or any other episode that people might be interested in. I don't really advertise all that much, a little bit here and there on Facebook, I have to say, so I'm not a liar, but word of mouth really makes this podcast go a long way. So if you can think of somebody who might like it, share it with them, and rate and like and subscribe. It, you know, it makes it go a long way, and it makes me feel just a little bit better. Anyway, have a great day, whoever was listening to this, and I hope it makes you feel just a bit more connected to the world around you. Bye!
Something that I didn't mention, but that I think might be interesting to you, last night, I was thinking about that whole concept of how, like, microbes are a part of our being, and I was like, I wonder what happens to them when we die. So, I don't know if you already know this, but when you die, your microbes don't die. Your microbiome actually, like, slowly shifts and is, like, responsible for helping you decompose. That it's, like, a part of you is still around. It's like the cleanup crew that's left over and is like, okay, now let's turn Alex into materials that we can use for other stuff. And, like, if that isn't living forever, I don't know what is.